welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standig here. Thank you guys, as always, for checking out the podcast. Thanks for checking me out on Twitter at Ben Standig, reading my work either at NBCWashington.com or FanRag Sports, or engaging me, talking about the Wizards, NBA, and whatnot, whatever platform is available to us. Fun podcast today for us. Joining me in moments, Michael Pena, NBA writer for Vice Sports. He wrote a story today that sort of caught my eye. It was, what if the NBA brought back the amnesty provision? Which player on each team would be the candidate to use it on? We don't have to tease this one too much, right? On the Wizards, I think we all kind of know who the obvious candidate would be. And even though Jan Mahimi has played better of late, as has the bench, that contract is an unwieldy one. And, you know, when we talk about, as we did on yesterday's podcast with about Boogie Cousins, a deep dive I did with Todd Dybas after the Wizards played the Pelicans, you know, part of the reason why it's hard to figure out how the Wizards could get a guy like Boogie Cousins, even if they wanted to, is partly because of the Mahimi contract. Not solely, but certainly partially. So we get into that, but also Michael's a Celtics guy, so we look ahead a little bit to Wizards-Celtics with that Christmas Day coming up, and get into some other NBA topics as well. So I'll play that for you guys here in just a moment. Let me first just sort of just give you a breakdown of kind of what's going on here in Wizards land since we spoke last. I went out to practice today to catch up with them. Scott Brooks, we spoke with him from the injury front. Otto Porter, he did not practice today, meaning Wednesday, but Brooks said that Otto told him he's feeling better. So, you know, we'll see what that means. The Wizards are off until Friday when they're at Brooklyn, then they play again on Saturday. So we'll see if that means Otto is back. He's missed the last two games with this hip injury. Obviously you gotta take it, as it comes. You don't want to rush him back. There is a concern from the outside that, hey, Otto had a hip injury early in his career. You know, is this related? Scott Brooks has told us it is not, that it was just he took a blow to that hip in the Clippers home game. And that's what he's dealing with. So we'll take that. We'll take him at his word that it's not a related situation. And we'll see if Otto Porter is back. Also, Bradley Beal was given the day off of practice. Understandably so, right? I mean, he's played a lot of minutes the last few days. The Wizards, practice is important, but they don't practice necessarily hard or as a team, five on five or anything every day. So if they got to give him the day off, so be it. Could also mention that the Wizards, I don't know if they cut it short today, but they're out and about in the community giving presents to families in the D.C. area. Certainly always a great day for the organization to be able to do that. Scott Brooks talked about the joy of that. We also spoke with Markieff Morris a little bit after the practice, and, I think the players, they do far more in the community than I think they probably get credit for, but this is one of those times where obviously, this time of year to be able to help out, people who are, down, struggling, could just use something uplifting to happen. The idea of the Wizards, the players coming to meet them, to give out presents is obviously a great day. So good on the Wizards for continuing this tradition, something they've been doing now for many, many years. I mentioned Markieff Morris. I will play you guys that interview probably on tomorrow's podcast. We caught up with Markieff Morris to talk about how he's feeling. Are the Wizards about to turn this thing around, facing his brother on Christmas? He brought up that twin thing. He admits the twin thing is kind of crazy, as we all do, right? The twin thing is kind of weird, especially with he and his brother seemingly having simultaneous injuries throughout this whole year. And speaking of the Wizards, are they able to turn this around? I wrote today on NBC4Washington.com, which you can find, that, it's worth noting that while the Wizards have a better record after 31 games than they did a year ago, 17-14 now, 15-16 then, it's not quite the same thing when you look at it from a momentum standpoint. These Wizards remained sideways. Last year's Wizards, by now, we just didn't realize it yet, but they had already started to show that they were a team that was about to go on and win 49 games, about to go win 17 straight home games. And so I looked at that, that and what's caused the sideways scenario now, and look at it from that perspective. So check that out on NBC4Washington.com. All right, let's get to, as I said, Michael Pena, NBA writer for Vice Sports. We just chatted a little bit ago, talked at length about a lot of things about the Wizards, about Jan Mahimi, about that Celtics rivalry. We start at the top talking a little bit about Victor Oladipo, and then it's in connection with the Wizards, you'll see in just a quick second. So let's get into that. You can follow Michael on Twitter, at Michael V. Pena, and fun conversation. You should read his stuff on Vice Sports, but for now, you should listen to him talking with me about the Washington Wizards here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. All right. As promised, joining the podcast from Vice Sports, you can follow him on Twitter at Michael V. Pena, the aforementioned Michael Pena with Vice Sports. I'm glad to get you on. I've been meaning to get you on here for some time. I know last year when the Wizards and Celtics were going toe-to-toe in the playoffs, you're a guy, at least you were up there in Boston at that point, and I know you cover them well, and I had been meant to get you on, but you know how the There's only so many hours in the day, and everybody was busy, and But I'm glad I finally got to get to you now. And I guess let's just start with this: how we're 30 odd games into the NBA season. How are we doing covering the league?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Ben. I mean, it would have been great to join you last year for what was obviously a really entertaining series between the Wizards and the Celtics. No drama either way, I think we can safely say. But yeah, this year it's been fun. I mean, I love the NBA basically more than anything in the world. So, I mean, this season has been particularly intriguing just because I think with all the storylines that we had from the off season, I think a lot of things have not played out as we expected, which really, you know, obviously adds intrigue and fascination. A lot of the teams and the players that we thought would perform extremely well have been disappointments, and you know, some of the trades that we graded and kind of set the grades in stone, we've, as a collective group of people who think we know what's happening in the league, we're wrong. So it's been a really interesting first couple months.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, just as you're saying that off the top of my head, I mean, the Paul George Victor Oladipo trade certainly is not going the way I think most people assumed, especially as Indiana got crushed for that trade, and now they are tied with the Wizards for sixth in the East, and Oladipo is looking like an All Star for sure. And then you got I didn't really love the Kyrie trade, to be honest. So that one for me has been definitely a something that's been, I don't want to say it's a mea culpa situation, but yeah, definitely like, oh, okay, so far, especially without Hayward, so far that's worked out way better than I imagined, or either one of those two, when you talk about things that have gone different than maybe people assumed, or I assume you're talking about either one of those or both?
I'm definitely talking about Paul George and the Victor Oladipo trade and Domas Sabonis. I mean, that one was, it's now looking like, you know, I penciled in, I think voting for the All-Star game starts or opens tomorrow. So I'm doing a little thing, and I penciled in, you know, just some guys I thought might be starting for the East and the West. And I mean, Victor Oladipo, it's really difficult not to put him in as a starter in the backcourt right now in the East, which is just, I mean, there's been a few injuries in the conference. John Wall, since this is a Wizards pod, I should mention that. But Victor Oladipo is just a phenom. And I was a little more, you know, with the Kyrie trade, I think Isaiah Thomas's injury kind of made that a more sensible decision for the Celtics. And obviously not having him and then having to deal with his contract situation this summer would have been a borderline, not disaster, but I mean, the team would be, you know, middle of the pack in the East right now, and I think a lot of people would be a little disappointed, especially after Gordon Hayward went down. So that trade kind of makes a little bit more sense to me, and obviously things have worked out. But yeah, the big one for me off the top of my head is definitely Victor Oladipo and what's happened with Paul George and the Thunder and how disappointing they've been as well.
That's funny because the other day I was talking with somebody about Oladipo in that there was a point, especially earlier in the year, like, hey, John Wall's going to make the All-Star team. We're all going to put Bradley Beal on the All-Star team. Could Otto Porter make it? He was, at one point, he was certainly killing it. It's been faded a little bit of late, and he's had the injury now the last week or so, or last few days. And then the idea was, oh, hey, you know what? Oladipo, now he's probably, if any hope that Otto had for making the team, probably gone away with Oladipo. Now your idea of, wait, Oladipo might start, and taking away what would be a spot, hypothetically for Wall or Beal, I hadn't even gotten to that point in the equation. But yeah, it just seems like every game he is just killing it. I wasn't intending actually to talk about Victor Oladipo, but since he's a DC guy, what the hell, we can do it for a quick second more. Do you think this is more about Victor Oladipo, or is this more about the George Oladipo trade? Is this sort of another Russell Westbrook situation where somebody leaves Westbrook and now his full game is expanding, where somebody joins Westbrook and they seem to be shrinking a little bit under, playing with a guy whose usage rate is so outlandish?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an either or thing. I think he's definitely playing beside Westbrook is difficult. He's kind of this explosive black hole persona on the floor where, he's averaging a triple-double, and how do I accentuate his strengths while also getting my own points and my own sources of production. So, that was just a really tricky situation. But then again, I thought Victor Oladipo, when he was in Orlando, was a little bit of a disappointment coming in as the second overall pick. He had flashes, most of them actually against the Oklahoma City Thunder, which I thought was why Sam Presti was so intrigued with him and tried to get him in the Serge Ibaka trade. But, I mean, when you look at him now, he's averaging like 25 points a game, shooting 43% from deep on a career-high 6.5 attempts per game, which is, I mean, it's absurd. And a lot of these are off the dribble. He's getting into the rim, finishing in the paint at the basket very efficiently. So he's just amazing. I don't think, just removing Westbrook from the equation can explain how good he's been. I think the system that Indiana has utilized him in, it's very up-tempo, a lot of pick and roll. I mean, the ball's in his hands a ton. A lot of the guys on that team really do compliment him. Miles Turner is a fantastic stretch big. They play small lineups quite a bit. So, I think it's a combination of both, but it's still one of the biggest surprises, if not the biggest surprise in the league right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because from the Wizards' perspective, we entered the year. Can the Wizards compete with Cleveland? Can they compete with Boston? Are they ready to, truly, is this the year they're going to be a contender? And now, 31 games into the season, they're tied with a team in the East that nobody would have predicted. I don't know how many people were thinking Indiana was going to be a playoff team this year, let alone, one that's looking pretty intriguing because of Oladipo. And I think it sort of shows you kind of how far Indiana's come, but also kind of shows you where the Wizards are kind of at right now through 31 games. I will get to some of your thoughts, I'm sure, about the Wizards throughout this. But the primary reason, I guess, we ended up talking today was something that you put up on Vice Sports that I mentioned in the intro. You wrote an article called "We Brought Back the NBA's Amnesty Clause," and your premise is, what if every team had the opportunity to shed one contract from their cap sheet tomorrow? Here's a close look at who they'd get rid of. And I saw you tweet this, and I immediately thought to myself, wow, Michael went out of his way to write an article about how the Wizards have to get rid of Jan Mahimi. And we'll get to that part in a second, but it almost sounds like I might be right on that one based on what you wrote about him. We'll tease that for a quick second, but you go through all the teams. This is always a fun topic. For those who don't remember the Amnesty Clause, but if you're a Wizards person, you probably do, because they used it to get rid of Andre Blatch. Basically, you could take it from right. You could take essentially just remove it from, you had to pay the guy, but it came off of your salary cap and any luxury tax issue. and you could kind of move on from there. But this was a few years ago, and now it's over, and maybe some teams are kind of wishing they would have it back after all that money that was spent a year ago.
Right. So, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. Like, when the amnesty provision came out, there were so many contracts around the league that were, you know, terrible. They were anchors on cap sheets. They kind of restricted the flow of free agency. And then with the new CBA came along, we saw, you know, shorter contract rules. And so that obviously kind of increased the flow of player movement. But then also the, you know, the cap spike of 2016, the summer of 2016, which, you know, the biggest cap spike in league history. And we saw a gigantic spending spree where contracts like Mahinmi was one of them. Teams feeling the need to fill their room, you know, right away as opposed to being patient. And, you know, those teams were and are being punished because, you know, the cap is not increasing at the same rate or even, you know, anything modest to that. So I thought it was just fun to kind of look at, you know, because, you know, back in the day, I'm old enough to remember when an expiring contract was was of value to teams in trades.
Right.
And recently that kind of has gone by the wayside. So, you know, we're not there yet where the expiring contract is really important, but I feel like we're headed for, you know, that normalcy. Where teams really, not every team is going to just have cap space every summer. They actually need to be smart with their cap sheet and with their salary and who they sign and for how much and how long. So I thought it would just be fun to kind of look around the league and, you know, some teams wouldn't have the need to use the amnesty clause. And when it was around and available, not every team did use it, but I kind of just made a hypothetical where it was like, if every team had to use an amnesty clause tomorrow, who would they get rid of? And I mean, Mahinmi is one of the more obvious and one of the reasons why I wrote the piece in the first place.
Eric, let's just get to what you wrote here. You've got some detail for all teams. Some of them you went into some pretty, you know, some pretty good length to explain why this player, the Wizards one. Very simple. It's literally one sentence. Jan Mahimi's got 3 years, $48 million, and your description is, ask anyone who roots for the Wizards how they feel about this contract, and you'll quickly understand why I felt the need to write this article. It's as if, like, the second that the pen hit the contract, everybody thought, hey, how quickly can the Wizards get rid of this contract? We've talked about this a bunch here. It never quite made sense. Forget whether he was worth the money, but you already had March and Gortat. Can't play them together. The NBA game is moving away from the type of center that Mahinmi is. He's never been anything close to an all-star. Whatever reason you want, there's some injury issues, some age issue. And then last year, obviously, was an utter disaster. This year hasn't been great. It's been a little better of late, but, you know, that's sort of a low bar kind of better. I don't know if you've, in your thinking of this article, had contemplated this, but where do you think Mahinmi ranks as far as, like, the worst contracts in the league right now?
I would say off the top of my head, I would say top five, easy, maybe top three. I mean, you have Timothy Mozgov that basically means that they had agreed to it before before they were allowed to negotiate, which is a whole different conversation. But so that one off the top of my head, I mean, that was basically used as a tax that the Brooklyn Nets had to absorb to acquire D'Angelo Russell, because the Lakers are now trying to clear salary. Lou Alden kind of falls in that same category. I remember when they signed him, and obviously, you know, they gave him an extra year when it looked like, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves were one team that offered three and a more reasonable price point. And, you know, the Lakers just came in and blew it away. So that was another hilarious one. I mean, Evan Turner's contract is not looking great. He was coming off a couple good years in Boston, where the fit was just perfect. And, you know, fit obviously matters, especially when you're an ascending team like the Portland Trailblazers. So they take him on, and you know, that's a lot of money for – I like Evan Turner as a player, but that's a lot of money for a guy who just can't and won't shoot threes, who's a wing coming off your bench. So there's been some bad ones, but, you know, just in terms of, you know, pure production and ability, I mean, whenever I watch on him he play, it's kind of like, why is he on the floor? I remember last night I was watching, I think it was in the second or third quarter, and he had a dunk attempt where he just lost the ball. And it's kind of like, what is happening right now? Why did he try? It's like he doesn't even know his own body. It's a little uncomfortable to watch him play sometimes. And I know the on-off numbers have been okay, but he just isn't even close to what they imagined he would be.
A lot of times before a game, I will just, you know, after we do with the coaches in the locker room, I'll just go back into the Wizards media room and, you know, I got some work to do before the game starts, or eat some food or screw around, whatever. Well, you know, if there's a player maybe coming, you know, we know a player's been injured or something, maybe I'll go out and watch them warm up on the court. But yesterday, I don't know, I was in a mood. I needed to get away from people, so I decided to go out to the court area, and I just sat there and watched the Wizards shoot around. And Bradley Beal was out there, Markieff Morris was out there, and then Jan Mahimi came out. And they all go through different types of drills depending on whatever they, you know, want to warm up with or work on or whatever. And Mahimi had one of the Wizards, part of their coaching staff, a guy who was, you know, a foot and a half shorter than him, essentially, sort of, you know, bodying him up and whatever. And it was somewhat playful, but, like, they were, like, he was, like, kind of, like, really going at Mahimi, and he repeatedly kept losing the ball. And, again, like I said, it wasn't, like, completely a serious thing, but, like, clearly he's 6'11", the other guy's, like, 5'2", and he kept losing the ball, and if it was just that, I'd be like, oh, whatever, but you see it in the game constantly as well. Whenever he gets the ball and he's handling it, you're like, oh, no, this is going to be awful. And different times where, like, they have him handling the ball out by the free throw line or area, and it's just like, oh, no, don't do this. just go inside. And, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, he's a good defensive player. He's a good rebounder. But he's hardly elite. Like, DeAndre Jordan is not exactly an offensive threat, but he does those other things at a really high level. So you can sort of deal with the offensive concerns. This isn't that on either level. So it really is, Mahimi's a super nice guy. He's gotten better of late. You know, he's been key for the second unit to help them get better. But, boy, it really is like watching him on a day-to-day basis. It really is hard to comprehend, like, what was the plan here?
Yeah, and, you know, the point of writing this isn't to, you know, make fun of these guys. And you know, it's not their fault that they became free agents when they did during this cap spike. It's not their fault that a general manager and a front office decided to throw, you know, $30+ million at their feet. So, again, I mean, he's 31 now. So you knew, just based on the arc of basically every player's career except LeBron James, that, you know, you weren't going to get the best of his career. You knew that he was a turnover machine. You know, he did improve as a role man on a short roll who could kind of hit the corner shooter on the move, and he kind of displayed that a little bit in Indiana, and that was nice to see. And his advanced metrics as a defender were superb. But again, like, you're paying him to basically be a backup if you're not going to trade Gortat. So it's just, you know, for a team that had a lot of other needs, that was just a really strange decision all around.
So just to sort of, you know, stick with this, you know, you're right. I mean, so the amnesty option doesn't exist. There is something called the stretch provision, which is not exactly the same thing, but it's something, it's not the same thing at all, but it's a tool the teams could use, potentially to, limit salary cap hits in a given year and spread it out over time. And, you know, when it comes to Mahimi, you know, again, like, everybody in these parts Michael's trying to figure out, how can the Wizards get DeAndre Jordan? How can the Wizards get DeMarcus Cousins? And every time you think about it, you're like, well, trade Jan Mahimi. But, you know, how can you get rid of Mahimi simultaneously? And that seems almost impossible unless you're just including tons of first-round picks or you know, plus Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre, or what have you. So it seems like that part is not a thing. The stretch provision, I don't know how realistic it is, but I guess it is something maybe to consider perhaps next year in free agency. Again, assuming things don't change dramatically. But I definitely never pretend to be a salary cap guru. I'm hardly a Larry Kuhn guy. What's your sense of the stretch provision when it relates to Mahimi? Or is it just one of those things where, like, dude, you all in Wizards land have just got to deal with the fact that you have this guy and, you know, figure it out?
So, yeah, funny you mentioned Larry Kuhn. I mean, I'm on his website right now because as soon as you said stretch provision, I had to bring it up. I don't think that it is beneficial to the Wizards to do this just because of the amount of money that he's owed over the next 3 years. Basically, the stretch provision would stretch that, as it's called, the stretch provision, it would stretch out the years that he's owed. I think it would be five since there's two left, and then you add one, so it would be 5 years, and you kind of stretch the money out over there. And I'm also not very good at math, but it's a good chunk of change that would have to be that would be on their books over the next 5 years. And I mean, I don't know what the benefit really there is for the Wizards. It's a lot of money. I mean, it would run through John Wall's contract. It would run through for the rest of Bradley Beal's contract and into his next deal in 2021-22. Otto Porter is probably going to opt out when he's a free agent in 2020-21. And I don't really know why you would want that on the books. It's kind of a thing where you just want to swallow it, and because you can't trade this deal. Well, I shouldn't say that because we've seen some absolute terrible contracts be moved in the NBA, but it's unlikely that this deal will be traded. So my guess is that they're just going to have to, you know, bite the bullet here and wait for it to come off naturally.
Yeah, and and as I said before, you know, you're somebody who's paying attention to the Celtics, and you really, you know, big, you know, obviously so much of what's going right for the Celtics is you got to give credit to the Brooklyn Nets for that, you know, unbelievable trade that was made a few years ago. But Danny Ainge has certainly done a lot of good things even with those assets. And the Celtics are, you know, continue to be in a position where they, you know, they add, you know, they move some pieces to get Kyrie Irving. They had enough or more, essentially they had enough salary cap situation to get Gordon Hayward, obviously, brutal injury there. And everybody's trying to figure out, for the Wizards, how do they get more? If you don't view Otto Porter as a third star, how do you get one? If you view Otto Porter as a viable, you know, part of a big three, but then how do you still get other pieces to compete with Cleveland and Boston? And nobody can seem to quite figure out how to make this work for the Wizards. Maybe you trade Kelly Oubre. Maybe you give up a first-round pick again, which could be the fourth time in 5 years they do it. Maybe Otto Porter, if you really can make a big deal, you move him. From where you talk to people or where you see with the Wizards, is there anything you really think that they could kind of do? Is there maybe we always talk about, would you take the risk on like trading a bunch of assets for, if say Boogie Cousins becomes available, knowing he's a free agent and he may not stay, would you take that kind of risk? Or what do you see from your world that the Wizards can do anything this year or some point going forward?
I mean, if you're the Wizards, basically, it's just not a pretty picture with your cap sheet. And it's really difficult with the contract sizes that they've amassed to be flexible. They basically don't have a lot of options. I mean, what you want to do in this situation is you need to hope for internal improvement. And the guys that you are paying, you know, Otto Porter, Bradley Beal, John Wall, these guys need to not only live up to their contracts, but they need to, you know, improve every year, and they need to round out their games as two-way players. I think that, you know, given their ages and where they're at in their careers, I think, you know, it's it's possible that each can continue to improve. I would expect Bradley Beal to continue to get better. I would definitely expect Otto Porter to become more of, you know, a shot creator than he's been, and just kind of expand his role a little bit. And then from there, I mean, you need youth to improve. You need Kelly. I would probably not be looking to trade Kelly Oubre, to be honest. I mean, I like him as a player. I think the positional versatility he provides, how he's performed when, you know, he's beside the three players that I mentioned in Gortat in that lineup, they're just absolutely obliterating people. And then, you know, you look at what happened with the pick that was traded for Markieff Morris and the production you've gotten out of him, and he's looking like he's probably on the downside of his career right now after battling injuries. So, I mean, you just want your young players to improve, and then you have to hit on the resources that you do have. So your mid-level exception coming up, you got to hit that contract. You have to hit on veteran minimum deals and hope that guys are willing to take pay cuts to play with someone who's as brilliant as John Wall and Brad Beal. You know, we've seen this year Mike Scott. He's played incredibly well, unsustainably so, but that's the type of production that you need when you just don't have the flexibility that Washington has. I mean, I don't know how aggressive you can be in the trade market. I just don't know if Gortat has any value. That seems unlikely to me. Morris does not have value at that, even though that the money that he's owed is, you know, not that great, and that's a pretty good value contract. I don't think he's too many teams around the league are clamoring for Markieff Morris, so. It's basically just you need to be really shrewd, and it's tough that the margin for error is really thin based on, you know, how much money that they've spent and where they've allocated it over the past few years.
Well, on that chipper note, let me get you out of here on this. The Wizards get a big game against the Celtics on Christmas Day. They've got a couple games in between now and then. I mean, they have won 3 of 4, but the Wizards, it doesn't, you know, they've been kind of sideways, though. Even some of these wins hasn't looked very pretty, and, you know, they had a wild one yesterday against the Pelicans, blow a 25-point lead, come back, and then pull away again. So we'll see what they look like on Christmas Day, but obviously a year ago in the playoffs, or not a year ago, but earlier this year in the NBA playoffs, it was probably the best, I guess I would say the best series in the whole playoffs, other than maybe the finals itself. So much fun, you know, the controversy, intensity, big plays, big moments, and obviously Boston ended up getting it in Game 7. And so we come into this season, and even though Boston gets Gordon Hayward, and even though they get Kyrie Irving, I mean, I definitely talked to enough people who weren't convinced that Boston was definitely better than the Wizards, that Washington had shown strides. You know, the Wall, Beal, Otto Porter, you know, they're going to get better. And, you know, God, the bench couldn't be any worse. Kyrie Irving, you know, how is that going to work on this new team? Questions about him, so on and so on. Well, obviously it's been, and then, of course, then Hayward gets hurt to start the year. And you think, oh, Boston, I mean, they'll make the playoffs. Maybe they'll even get home court. But, you know, beyond that, you know, what can you say? And now, of course, they're leading the Eastern Conference. They got off a great run. Kyrie Irving's been spectacular. And, you know, the big wild cards for me were Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and they've just provided so much for Boston. And I guess basically my question is, when we come into this Christmas Day game, do you think that rivalry is still there? A lot of the Boston guys are even gone, but who were there last year. Do you think it's still there, or do you think that from the Celtics' perspective, it's sort of like, hey, we are somewhere else. Like, you guys, you know, maybe we had a fun series last year, but we're not really thinking about you guys. You guys catch up, maybe we'll talk about it. But for now, you know, different team, different vibe, different deal. We're not really thinking about the Wizards anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a rivalry. I mean, all the main pieces that were so, you know, that really jacked that up into really intense, a series of intense battles throughout the regular season and into the playoffs are gone. You have, you know, the Game 7 hero or demon, depending on who you're rooting for. Kelly Olynyk is down in Miami. Jay Crowder, who, you know, stuck his finger in John Wall's face last year, he's in Cleveland. Avery Bradley, who just kind of minds his own business, but is kind of a hound and a pest for Wall and Beal. He's gone. So, and Isaiah, obviously, is no longer theirs either. So, I mean, it's, I don't really think that, you know, when you have a lot of, so many of the contributors in Boston weren't there last year, weren't even in the league. If you look at Jason Tatum and some of the other rookies that they have. So it's difficult to say that there's a rivalry. I don't know if the Celtics would view it that way. I don't know if the Wizards would either. But, you know, it's definitely the potential is there for, you know, these teams to really, I mean, the Christmas Day game should be entertaining regardless, just because I think the Wizards will get up for it. You know, they seem to play, you know, they seem to not that they don't get up against lesser competition, although one could might be able to make that argument, understandably so, being that it's the regular season. But I think the Christmas Day game will be really intriguing, and the possibility of these two teams meeting up in a seven-game series in the spring is also intriguing. And you know, it's kind of a dichotomy where you have the Wizards, who, you know, aren't very deep, but have kind of leaned on continuity and their top-tier talent to become one of the better teams in the conference. And then you have the Celtics, which are much more egalitarian in how they play. Everyone is, you know, the lineups that are being used by Brad Stevens, some of them have, even this late in the season, just guys have literally never played with one another at the same time. You know, we saw Shane Larkin, Terry Rozier, Kyrie Irving trio on the floor for the last possession of the Pacers game the other night when they stole the ball and won at the buzzer. Like, that stuff, it's just like there's a lot of mixing and matching still in Boston. I think they're still trying to figure out their own way and who they are and all that, even though they've had a ton of success. It's still growth for them. So, I mean, yeah, it's to answer your question, I don't think that they still view it as a rivalry, but these are two definitely still two of the better teams in the Eastern Conference.
Well, it should be interesting. If nothing else, we get the Morris twins going head-to-head, assuming that they're both healthy, which has certainly not been the case. Most of the year at practice today, a couple of us talked to Markieff, and we asked him about his brother being healthy or his brother being hurt. And then, but he's right around the same time he's hurt, and he's like, "Yeah, man, this twin thing, it's crazy." I was like, "Oh, even he's now there's something happening." Nice.
Yeah, and then he rubbed his knee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, if Markieff sees that his brother got hurt, he's gonna be like, "Oh no, this is not good." That's crazy. Anyway, it should be a lot of fun. Speaking of fun, go check out Michael's article on Vice Sports, talking about what if we had the amnesty clause, and what would your teams do? Obviously, we kind of have a feeling what the Wizards would maybe want to do, but there's a lot of other fun names and stories there. So check them out, and of course, follow him on Twitter at Michael V. Pena. Michael, really appreciate it, man, and hopefully we can do this again sooner than later.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Ben.
Cool. Appreciate it. All right, there we go. Fun conversation with Michael Pena from Vice Sports. Good to get some outside perspective on the Wizards, Jan Mahimi of it all. And, you know, look, Jan Mahimi has been better of late, right? I mean, I think we could all agree to that. Low bar, whatever you want to say, and better doesn't mean worth $16 million a year over 4 years. That part is what it is. But, you know, from the Wizards' perspective, the good thing for the Wizards is their bench with Mike Scott, who is just on fire these days, Kelly Oubre when he's with the bench, Tomas Satoransky, Jan Mahimi. You know, suddenly this group is not, or I shouldn't say suddenly, but this group has been better and better, far different from a year ago. If the Wizards had the same injuries that they've had this year, last year, who knows how many games they would have won, or where they would have finished, or maybe even if they make the playoffs. Who knows? But this year's team, because the bench has been solid to better than that at times, and for a good stretch now, they've been able to withstand some of these injuries. So, you know, we want to point out some of the good things that have happened with Mahimi. nonetheless, topics like the one Michael wrote about are reminders that the Wizards are in a bit of a bind here, and I say that probably as an understatement, with that contract on top of the ones that they already have. In any event, the Wizards, again, back at it on Friday, and we'll be back at it with another Locked on Wizards podcast on Thursday. I'll play for you, some of you the Markieff Morris sound that I have, and we'll come up with some other topics for sure on this. Well, I guess it's a Christmas week, right? Christmas is coming up in 5 days now, so make sure you got your get your presents ready to go out there. All right, enough stalling out of me. Thanks to you guys for listening. You can find all the podcasts on iTunes. Until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long bounce shot.
Dagger!